The May 9th, 2014 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby called to order. Ms. Phillips, would you please take the roll?
Trustee Curtin?
Aye, here.
Trustee Joyce?
Here.
Trustee Reyna?
Here.
Trustee Young?
Here.
Trustee Zoller?
Present.
Okay, a quorum exists for business of the board to begin. Ms. Phillips, will you certify that the notice for this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the meeting notice requirements have been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before this meeting in the Cook Administration, Student Union, and Academic Library buildings.
Are there any comments or corrections to the meeting, to the minutes from our meeting of March 7th? If there are no comments or corrections, I ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second that.
Trustee Curtin?
Aye.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
I understand the president is en route, so we'll go straight to the report on academic and student affairs, but we won't vote on it. Trustee Leak is also en route, and we won't vote on any of the resolutions until Trustee Leak arrives. But you can begin your reports.
For the record, my name is Angela Henderson, and the president actually is meeting with, we have something due to the Department of Ed, and he's meeting with a team of people who are working on that report due today.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, trustees, president, staff, and guests. I'm excited to share with you the activities of academic affairs during this last quarter. I've grouped them in the areas of shared governance, communication, and academic affairs as I update them. So for academic affairs, I wanted to share that we're in commencement season, and many celebrations have occurred over this last quarter. At our honors convocation, and Ms. Muscadin will start to pass out some of our brochures. At our honors convocation, we celebrated over 300 students who were honored for their academic achievements, such as being on the dean's list, the president's list, the provost list, and two students received the president's cup as well as a persistence award. The two students who received the president's cup and the persistence cup were interviewed by a committee. They were recommended by faculty and staff, and those recommendations were given to the president and accepted. So we're very proud of these scholars. I've asked Ms. Muscadin to share with you the program so you can see everyone who was awarded a scholarship for that night. I will say that our student trustee, Ismael Reyna, was one of the awardees. On Saturday, April 23rd, we had a graduate reception for our spring graduates. We had 600 family members and students to attend this event in our Jones Convocation Center. It was co-hosted by two professors, Dr. Ada Abraha and Dr. Ivy Dunn. This is something that was started during the last 3 years, and it's an opportunity for our students to have their families get together in a relaxed environment. The program is for about 2 hours, and the entire program is about them. Our CSU Jazz Band played for the evening, and our student entertainer, Aziza, sang. For the first time, we had each college take college pictures, and it was a great evening for our CSU graduates and staff. Our commencement date is Thursday, May 15th, 2014. Our breakfast will start at 9 o'clock, and the commencement ceremony will begin promptly at 11 o'clock. Mr. Marty Castro is our commencement speaker. Mr. Castro is the president and CEO of Castro Synergies, LLC, which provides strategic consulting services to corporations, entrepreneurs, and nonprofit organizations. Mr. Castro was also appointed by President Barack Obama to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights in January of 2011. And in December 2009, Mr. Castro was appointed by Illinois Governor Pat Quinn to chair the Illinois Human Rights Commission. We're very honored to have him as our commencement speaker and hope to see you on December 15th. Our Center for Teaching, Research, and Excellence hosted a faculty recognition ceremony in May this month. We honored faculty who have taught 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, and 30 years. We also recognized two faculty educators of the year. The purpose of our Center for Teaching, Research, and Excellence is to do a few things. We build community among the faculty, we provide professional development, and we actually provide training in online learning. So this year we plan the celebration. Our retirees received watches, which hopefully they won't need as they leave the university, but they did receive watches. And I'm told that next year we will be honoring a faculty member who has been here for 50 years. I'd like to thank Trustee Curtin for attending. And I also provided some information about that event in your package. The child care center plans are moving expeditiously. We have a child care committee under the leadership of Dean Satasha Green in the College of Education, as well as Professor Patricia Steinhaus, who is our professor of child care, early childhood education. We formed this committee to guide the project under the leadership of Project Director Tracy Stokes Nesbitt. We know that 70% of our students have a child, at least one child. And so we have this committee that's comprised of students, faculty, and staff. So as an update, just to let you know that our president and our Intergovernmental Affairs Director, Farrah Muscadin, have been working with the legislators to secure additional funds so that we'll have a safe, state-of-the-art facility. And some of the updates include that it will be attached to the College of Education. It will be not only a center, but an academic lab. So our early childhood education students will be able to use that lab as they learn the difference between infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. It'll be approximately 30,000 square feet. We'll have 8 classrooms serving infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, and we will have a pickup and drop-off area that's accessible to King Drive. We'll keep the board briefed on the progress from this committee, but we, at every opportunity, we are briefing our students and our faculty and our community about the progress of this center. In April, our Department of Music had an opportunity to perform with the Symphony of Oak Park and River Forest. They were invited to perform the Mozart Requiem and more at the Symphony Center downtown on Monday evening, April 28th, 2014. It was a great night of music for all and an honor for our students and our staff to participate on this night. We are also working very hard to increase our study abroad opportunities for our students and our faculty. This summer, our students will be in Kenya, they'll be in Ghana, they'll be also in Austria. This will be the first time that our students and our faculty will participate in the Austria program. Austria has a global seminar for higher education faculty and students. Our students will work with students from all over the country, and they will work on global engagement issues. So we have our students leaving in May, and then our faculty will leave in July. On Thursday, May 1st, we had a faculty town hall meeting, and it was held to communicate with faculty as we end the semester. We talked about harassment, bullying, our Higher Learning Commission report. We have a communication report, which is due June 1st, 2014, and our faculty co-chairs and the committees presented this information. This year, the president and I also visited every department, every academic department for listening sessions. And it was a great opportunity for us to listen to adjuncts, lecturers, as well as tenured faculty about issues they might face in their departments, as well as their achievements as a faculty, as well as the students. As a result of that, one of the things we learned is our biology department has had a record year for publication. It's not easy being a faculty member, providing service, and also publishing. So this year, biology, as a faculty, and I'm passing their publications around, had a record number of 10 publications. We had a luncheon celebrating this achievement yesterday with our biology faculty. We met with about 15 faculty and 4 graduate students. And I tell you, talking to the students who are engaged in research with their faculty is very inspirational. Many of them are looking, well, one is a doctor already. Many of them are going into med school, dentistry, and want to be researchers like their faculty. So we had their mentors, 15 undergraduate and graduate faculty, who were there with not only their students, but the chairperson of the department and the dean. This quarter, our College of Pharmacy also had an accreditation visit this March 2014 to follow up on a few standards. The dean, faculty, and staff did a great job in preparing for the visit. They had to prepare a self-study. And we are working very hard to meet the deadlines for the renovation of the pharmacy school. So Dean Mobley Smith has shared that there will be a ribbon cutting when this project is completed, and I will update the board when that occurs. And then finally, I wanted to share that shared governance comes up many times throughout the university, and I wanted to share a few examples of shared governance that occurs from the Office of Academic Affairs throughout the year. Every Wednesday, I meet with the deans, the staff of Academic Affairs, the chair of the Faculty Senate, and other leaders in the university. We meet every Wednesday for 2 hours to discuss policies, procedures, issues across the university and the departments. Some of the topics include shared governance issues. We talk about retention, catalogs. We talk about whatever is facing the academic community at that time. And at that time, the department deans as well as the participants get a chance to talk about any issues that their groups are facing as well. Some other examples of shared governance committees that we have across the university include commencement, policies and procedures, our university accreditation steering committee, and assessment. All of those committees have faculty, staff, and students who participate on those committees in some form. That concludes my report on academic affairs. I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Washington, to talk about the Westside campus.
Good morning, Board of Trustees and members of the dais.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Let me start off by saying that through the sponsorship of Senator Kimberly Lightfoot and Representative LaShawn Ford, the state has been very supportive and cooperative through our receipt of a $40 million grant and the management of it. The grant is totally sufficient to complete phase one of the project. The scope of the project includes the planning and the development of a new higher educational structure and campus, primarily on Chicago West Side and West Suburban communities. Boundaries identified for the location of the campus are West Avenue on the east, Austin Boulevard on the west, Roosevelt Road on the south, and North Avenue on the north in the city of Chicago. Chicago State has determined its defined catchment area, and by catchment is what we mean is the area that we'll be looking to draw the majority of our students for the new campus. That campus area is Halsted on the east, Belmont on the north, 31st Street on the south, and the beltway of US 294 on the west, which is Proviso Township, which includes the communities of Maywood, and Bellwood. The project has been developed to be completed within five primary professional service areas. One was the feasibility study, which was completed October 21st, 2013. The second area is the site selection and analysis services, which was completed October 7th, 2013. The other area that we have is the architectural and engineering services. There, we're expecting that process to be completed by the end of second quarter of 2014. That's where we'd be looking to select an architect to do the design and for the new campus itself. The next area is land acquisition. Land acquisition is a process where we're looking to acquire the land or buildings for the structure. The land identification process, we anticipate that to be completed by June of 2014, and thereafter moving into the procurement process, which should take us throughout the third quarter of 2014. And finally, there would be the construction period, which we have determined is a 15-month process. Chicago State's first objective was to engage a consultant to perform a feasibility study to analyze the market to determine if and what was the academic needs on the west side and the west suburban communities of Chicago. The study was also going to confirm if a campus like Chicago State was needed in the community and if it would be supported by the students, justifying the existing of the building of a new campus. Chicago State hired the firm of Brasford and Dunleavy, a renowned planner in the education field. For the feasibility study, Brasford and Dunleavy performed strategic analysis, market research, academic program evaluation, enrollment scenario modeling, and a financial analysis including the development of both a capital budget and a 10-year performer. Also included in the study was academic space planning, academic program sizing, and the building program development. A comprehensive market analysis was conducted in order to understand students and area demographics, recommend academic program offerings, evaluate Chicago State's market position in comparison to peer institutions, and assess potential demand for the contemplated campus. The peer institution that we compared ourselves to was Northeastern, University of Illinois, Chicago, Concordia, Dominican, East-West University, National Lewis, Robert Morris, and Roosevelt. Only one of those institutions attracted the type of students we are looking at, and that is Northeastern. And their campus is located far ways from the West Side and West Side communities. To paraphrase Dr. Watson's words, the West Side is an educational desert. With the planning currently underway, Chicago State will fill that void. The research yielded important information showing that a significant number of students from the West Side are currently enrolled at Chicago State University. This particular piece of research demonstrated the strength and the demand for CSU to provide education opportunities on the West Side. The market analysis included a detailed assessment of the local employment market with the Department of Labor job statistics over the next 10 years. That helped us determine or develop the program offerings that will most likely yield jobs for future Chicago campus, future West Side campus graduates. We made a conscientious effort to identify degree programs where jobs will more likely be available upon the student's graduation. In addition, the consultant held interviews with Chicago State senior administrators, department heads, high school administrators and students, community leaders and representatives, and others to discuss the recommended academic programs. Initially, Chicago State will be offering 12 academic programs, 10 bachelorettes, and 2 master programs. The bachelor programs are criminal justice, computer science, graphic design, accounting, finance, business management, entrepreneur, human resource management, logistics, supply chain management, community health, and health information administration. The master's program consists of social work and education. Inclusive of these academic programs, the university will also be offering continuing education courses, certificate programs, and support various communities events. It will be a four-year institution with 2-year feeders. We're looking to establish a relationship with community colleges in the area. The feasibility also had the purpose of telling us the amount of building space needed and the minimum size of the campus. It was determined a minimum site of 6 acres would be required to allow for future growth of the campus. The study recommended phase one and a phase two program. Two phases are recommended because it takes a number of years to complete the enrollment evolution, which each succeeding year, the enrollment population would grow with new incoming students. We wanted to be careful not to build a building that was too large where we'd not be able to utilize all of the academic program space. And economically, we thought this would not be a prudent thing to do because we would not be able to heat, cool, and secure those vacant spaces. The phase two approach allows us to add on building mass at the appropriate time after enrollment has stabilized. Phase one is budgeted at $40 million for a 71,000 gross square foot facility, and phase two is budgeted at $20 million for an additional 29,000 gross square foot facility. The West Side campus would include one or two buildings, on-campus parking, landscaping, and various treatments. Phase one enrollment is projected at 520 FTEs, full-time equivalents. Chicago State is also exploring the concept of leasing temporary satellite space to house academic classes in the defined catchment area. The temporary space will be in operation until the opening of the new facility. Three locations are proposed, each with a projected enrollment of 75 students per location. The locations are projected to be open for spring 2015 session. The three locations are Maywood, Austin, and North Lyndale. The site selection and analysis consultant completed their work October 7, and that firm, the name of that firm was John Roden Architects. The site selection analysis initially recommended 23 potential sites throughout the defined area. The criteria used to identify the potential site included the size of the lot, location, existing infrastructures that was there, parking and transportation capabilities, public transportation accessibility, proximity to major roadways, potential environmental issues, adjoining properties, traffic studies, zonings, as well as crime data. In August of 2013, Dr. Watson, along with senior administrators, toured 14 sites out of the 23 sites recommended. The remaining sites was not considered appropriate for our use. From there, we shortlisted to 5 sites. Appraisals are currently being performed on the properties to ascertain their value. We're projecting this process will be concluded by the end of June 2014. We're also in the phase right now of doing the evaluation and the selection of the architect engineer, and we're projecting that phase will be concluded as well, June 2014. We are in the final stages of developing a marketing and community outreach program. Chicago State is reviewing various techniques and tools to market our brand, i.e. billboards, community organizations, high schools, community colleges, fairs, West Side dignitaries, newspapers, town hall meetings, etc. We see this marketing as a required component, not only to ably inform those citizens of the new institution that is coming to their community, but it also would help generate and increase initial enrollment figures. One last note of interest, we have a cadre of partners in our Westside campus development effort. This partnership includes a host of community and service organizations on the west side and west suburban areas, as well as elected officials. All have come together along with representatives from Chicago State to form the Westside Campus Planning Advisory Group. The group meets regularly every other month and serves as a contributing advisor to the overall effort. And last, we're looking at the campus doors to open in the year of 2016. Thank you.
Mr. Washington, could you tell the board something about yourself and your qualifications to be the project manager?
I've been in capital planning, facility management for over 30 years. I've had a number of stints, if you will, performing this particular work. Started off at Chicago Park District where I was the director of capital improvements. I later went over to Cook County where I was the assistant director for capital planning. I then went to the Chicago Board of Schools where I was the deputy chief operating officer overseeing the renovation of all schools and the building of new schools, and as well as working with the Public Building Commission. And I also worked at the state overseeing the property management of all state facilities throughout the state of Illinois.
Questions from?
You mentioned the elected officials that are part of the process. Specifically, what aldermen of what wards are?
Well, actually, we have met and talked with all of them. All of them are highly interested. You have Deborah Graham. You have you have Chandler. You have Walter Barnett. You have Meeks. You even have Phil Reddy that's involved. And then with the state elected officials, state officials, I mentioned Senator Lightfoot, you have LaShawn Ford, I should also mention Jason Urban has a keen interest in the project. And all of them have been very helpful. They don't care where the project is going to be located, if it's going to be in their ward or their district, just long as on the west side, and they feel it's an institution that's needed very badly on that side of town.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Washington, do you believe that, let me just back up a minute. I think I heard you say that we have quite a number of students from the west side on this campus. So as we build another campus on the west side, do you anticipate that we will be losing students on this campus?
Not at all. We looked at that, and the program is not to take from this institution. That also helped us determine some of the programs that was going to be offered as well. With the students here, we feel that this new campus is going to provide opportunity for the other residents or the other students that's in that area to be able to attend a 4-year college.
There are no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Tanya Hall and Ms. Quimby, who are our Higher Learning Commission committee co-chairs, are not present yet. So I'll give a brief update on what's going on with the committee. The committee is comprised of about 30 students, faculty, and staff from across the university. It's called the University Accreditation Steering Committee. And the goal is for the committee to continue to meet even after the 10-year accreditation self-study and visit, so that we will continue to address any accreditation issues ongoing. It's a quality improvement body. The project for this year has been to prepare the communications report
that is due to the Higher Learning Commission on June 1st. And so the two co-chairs, I believe, are somewhere in the library working on the final stages of the report. So we presented the report to several constituents across the university, including students and faculty, and we'll continue to share that information. We'll post it on what we call our intranet so that people can comment before we actually submit the report to the Higher Learning Commission. Some of the issues were communication, the development of policies and procedures, and so we have worked to address those, do focus groups, talk to other stakeholders to see how we can continue to improve those and in those areas. So two items that have come up this year that address communication include one of our magazines. This is the first issue of our CSU. It's called At CSU. It's our student mag. Mm-hmm. About a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years, and it's coming across, we had a couple of students who asked, and a student who asked, a story is on him at the back of the magazine. He asked the president about starting some type of communications newspaper or magazine at the university. So what we did was we worked with Dean Canis, we worked with the Communications, Media, Arts, and Theater Department, and decided that we would make it a part of a class. So this is the result of the year's work of our communications students, and it looks very good. So this is the first. Please, when you get a chance, read the stories. It's a great, our editor is our professor of public relations, and that's in the front, inside cover. Her name is Professor Marilyn Olson. And you'll get a chance to see some of the things that are happening on campus. From a faculty perspective, I also passed out another publication. It's called Profiles in Excellence. It comes out in the spring. It comes from Mr. James Kowalski. Will you please stand? Mr. Kowalski works in the Center for Teaching Research and Excellence. Mr. Mike Sikowski is with him as well. He's the director. What they do throughout the year is we have a committee who works on providing professional development funds and stipends to faculty across the university. And on a side note, I have to tell the story that when the president started this, the money for professional development was $50,000 and now it's $500,000. And as a result of that, you can see the travel, the professional development, the publications, and the work that is being done across the university as a result of that support. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see some more of the great research that our faculty, that faculty is doing across the university. Most of the faculty are also working with students in their labs, and this is a direct result of that. So we had a provost colloquium, and that's something that has been occurring, but we had our annual one this spring, and the faculty who are in this book, highlighted in this book, actually had poster sessions and presented to the overall community. So it was a great day, and that concludes my report.
Thank you for that information. That is good news, as you say. I believe we're able to address the action issues.
Good.
We're ready to go.
The action item that we have from Academic Affairs is the granting of tenure status. The university, Chicago State University Board of Trustees regulations established the authority for the awarding of tenure in Article 2. The 10 faculty members listed below are recommended for conferment of tenure based on input from the faculty, from the deans, from the department personnel committee, and from the university personnel committee. And the president and I support the recommendations. And we, it's an action item for today.
Okay.
And we are asking for your approval.
Are we going to name the faculty members?
I will.
Yes. Dr. Ehab Abarashid, PhD. He's Associate Professor in the Department of Pharmaceutical Sciences, College of Pharmacy, from the University of Mississippi. Ansar Asim, PhD, Assistant Professor of Biology. Abir El-Afi, PhD, Associate Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences. Nadeem Fazal, PhD, Associate Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences. Miguel Fernandez, PhD, Associate Professor in the Department of Early Childhood and Bilingual Education in the College of Education. Dr. Tonya Hall, PhD, Assistant Professor of Counseling in the Counseling Center. Dr. Troy Harden, Assistant Professor, Department of Social Work, the College of Arts and Sciences. Dr. Kelly Harris, Assistant Professor of History in the Department of Geography, Sociology, History, and African American Studies and Anthropology, the College of Arts and Sciences. Dr. Jamila Jordan, Assistant Professor, Department of Early Childhood and Bilingual Education in the College of Education. And Dr. Miss Kamisha Khan, MFA, Associate Professor of Theater in the Department of Art and Design Communications. Thank you. And Dr. Paula Carney, PhD, Associate Professor of Health Studies in the College of Health Sciences, and she also works as an Assistant Provost for Graduate Programs and Professional Studies. The above faculty meet the criteria for tenure and are submitted to the Chicago State University Board of Trustees for approval and confirmment of the status of tenure.
All right, we're going to call for a vote on approval of that tenure resolution.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
The resolution on tenure has passed. Can we address the second issue?
Yes.
The cyberbullying policy?
Before we address that, I want to bring to the attention of the board that this is the first group of faculty to receive tenure under the new DAC.
Yes.
You know, and that is major. The university has raised its standard in order to get tenure at the university. It has not raised it by a degree. It is a quantum leap. So our university is something that we're very proud of. It's something that is going to put the it's going to position the university in a very positive way going forward in terms of having strong faculty. And I want to commend the deans. I want to commend the faculty for being bold enough to raise the standards in order to get tenure. Without a doubt, people who are receiving tenure today have met some of the highest standards that this university has ever set in terms of tenure, and I commend them. And I commend the board for supporting the very challenging process we went through for 2 years, if you remember, of changing the DAC and raising the standards. And it was very challenging, and I commend you for supporting us during that difficult time to raise these standards.
Are there any other comments or questions from the board? If not, then we'll move on to the other action item.
Okay, thank you, Trustee Joyce. Attorney Cage.
Yeah, thank you, Trustee. The university recognizes the importance of information technology to the mission of the university, while at the same time recognizing that these platforms present opportunities for misuse and for people to harm others when technology is used without regard to the consequences and without respect for one another. in order to foster a safe learning environment and work environment at the university for students and employees, the university has drafted a cyberbullying harassment policy, which prohibits any activity that deliberately threatens, harasses, intimidates individuals, and places individuals in a reasonable fear of harm to the individual or damage to the individual's property, or has the effect of substantially disrupting the orderly operation of the individual's daily life via the use of electronic information and communication. This is the second reading of this policy. Since the first reading, at the president's direction, there is a faculty town hall and a student town hall. At both town halls, there is robust discussion and significant support for these two policies. And so we're asking the board to adopt a resolution approving this this cyberbullying policy.
Now, is there anything we have to do in terms of adopting the policy today without a third reading?
Because of the faculty town hall, the board rules provide that the third reading of the policy can in fact be waived.
Do we need a vote to waive that?
Yes.
Do we have a resolution?
Yes. I've just basically, so do you want me to read the resolution?
Yes, please.
Okay. Chicago City University is committed to providing a safe and secure environment for Chicago State University community members, whereas while the university recognizes the importance of information technology, the university also recognizes that these platforms present opportunity for misuse when the technology is used without regard to consequences and without respect to one another. And whereas the university recognizes a safe learning environment at the university is necessary for students and employees. And whereas to further this goal, the board seeks to adopt a cyberbullying policy prohibiting any activity that deliberately threatens, harasses, intimidates an individual, places an individual in reasonable fear of harm to the individual or damage to the individual's property, or whereas the effect of substantially disrupting the orderly operation of individual's daily life via electronic information and communication devices. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees adopts a attached cyberbullying harassment policy.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that we adopt the resolution as read and that we waive the third reading.
Second that.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Absolutely.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. President, you have a remark?
One, I want to once again thank the board for being supportive of this policy. This policy is 30 years ago, one would not have thought that this would have been even an issue at a university campus. Today, this is one of the core issues on a number of university campuses throughout America. At Chicago State, students have come to us and have alleged that they have run into a hostile learning environment. We are investigating that. That is serious. We have a responsibility to ensure that our students have a learning environment that is safe and that is conducive to learning. 2 weeks ago, one block from my family home, a 14-year-old girl was shot and killed, directly related to cyber issues. My worst nightmare is getting a call at 1 o'clock in the morning. I've talked to all my colleagues on the different boards that I serve in higher education. Everybody's worst nightmare is that call at 1 in the afternoon or 1 o'clock at night, and you have an active shooter. you lose control at that point. Not only is that family's life changed, but that university. So we must be proactive. We must be fair. We must be decisive. But we have a responsibility, and I greatly appreciate the board's support, and I want to assure the board that the administration is doing everything within our power, within the law, to address the bullying that is taking place on our campus. And I encourage the faculty, and I encourage the staff to find their voice and speak up when they see, when they hear cyberbullying. We cannot compromise on cyberbullying because people are our friends. They are our colleagues. That silent voice becomes the platform for their activity of bullying individuals. Find your voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Now, we have voted to waive the third reading, and we've accepted the cyberbullying policy, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, I believe that concludes your testimony. Thank you, Dr. Anderson.
Thank you, Trustee Joyce and trustees.
Thank you, Dr.
Now we'll hear from enrollment management, from Dr. Latrice Eggleston.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Trustees Joyce, Curtin, Leek, Smith, Zoller, and Raina. Good morning, President Watson, and all others who are present. For the record, I am Dr. Latrice Eggleston, Interim Director of Institutional Effectiveness and Research. I am here to deliver the report for Enrollment Management on behalf of Interim Vice President of Enrollment Management, Attorney Lashondra Peoples. I'm glad to report that we are on track for summer and fall enrollment increases based on our registration headcount reports as of today's date. For summer 2014, our unduplicated headcount is 55% higher than it was at this time last year. In addition, we are 42% higher with our full-time equivalency as well. For the fall term 2014, with the additional registration count of our pharmacy students, we see increases in all areas, including our new admits, which are up by 10%. Our unduplicated headcount is approximately up by 6.2%, and our full-time equivalency is up by 6.7%. Launching on August 1st, 2014, CSU will be implementing the common application for entering freshmen who will be enrolling fall 2015. Our current Associate Vice President of Enrollment Management, Ms. Cherie Sidney, and our Director of Admissions, Matthew Harrison, are actually in Washington, D.C., as I'm speaking, to attend the Common Application Conference. This effort will expand the reach of Chicago State University and provide a wider market of recruitment for students around the world. We will be the second institution in the state, along with the University of Illinois at Chicago, to use this application process. So we're excited about those, that new outreach to prospective students. Our outreach efforts also continue to expand our goals to increase enrollment fall 2014 by 3% and to continue our goal to become an Hispanic serving institution by the year 2016. With that being said, our goal is to increase our Hispanic enrollment 6% each year within the next 3 years. We are engaging in a telemarketing campaign to get students to commit to CSU. Students and staff are leading this campaign, so we have students calling prospective students to encourage them to say yes to CSU, to get them ready to come to student orientation and register for classes to start this fall. The marketing and communications team has doubled their social media engagement by over 200%, reaching 3.2 million community members compared to 1.05 million the same time or the same quarter this time last year. The Office of Institutional Effectiveness and Research participated in the National Student Clearinghouse Academy on yesterday to strengthen its ability to provide data regarding our enrollment, retention, and graduation trends here at CSU. And lastly, the university also launched its first alumni giving campaign, which had not been done since 2007, entitled Finish Strong. And it's encouraging our alumni to donate to scholarships for students to here at CSU. And I'm sorry, mistaken. Lastly, our Jazz in the Grass kickoff starts on June 18th, and we look forward to having your presence one Wednesday evening to enjoy this most popular community event. That's the end of the enrollment management report.
Could I ask about the common application that will be common to whom?
So the common application is for entering freshmen, and it's an online application that is accessible to anyone across the globe.
And will there be a large number of universities subscribing to that same application?
There are thousands. Yeah.
All major universities, and I mean major universities, apply. What happens is it allows a student to apply online, but it allows a student to identify five colleges that they're going to apply, and we're never one of the five because we're not common apps. So we are excluded from an opportunity because we have never done this. No, because we're not signed up. It's a major issue. It's a major software implementation. Your major universities have this. And a number of universities our size don't have it because it is difficult to install. We're very blessed to have Prashant and a team of individuals who are going to focus on this, and we are going to install it. This will open up our horizon, open up access of our university to Chicago public schools individuals who before may have wanted to make us one of their five choices, but could not. So this one's major. This is what they call a sea change in terms of admissions.
Thank you.
And did I miss anything on that?
Nope.
Provost? And you start operating off of data off of a computer now with student data. Everything was pencil and paper. We never did that before. So, you know, it's going to be, and everybody who has dealt with software, you know that that's only half of the issue. We have to retrain everybody. That's going to be the challenge. The software is usually the easy part. People don't realize it, but software is the easy part. The difficult part is the culture change you have to bring about in your workforce. So it's going to be a process, and it's going to be a challenge. But it's something we are committed to doing, and when we finish it, the university would have moved into the second decade of the 21st century in terms of admissions. And Prashant, have I missed anything? Speak up.
I just wanted to mention that we are also implementing a document management system that will really change the way we operate at CSU along with workflow. It really automates a lot of things that we do manually at CSU. Come next year, we will no longer have to move papers around for many of our processes. Today, most of them are manual. We move papers around. With this implementation, we will not have to do that.
Thank you, Prashant.
No, I have a question though about enrollment. I guess confused because you gave several categories of enrollment that were increased by a certain percent.
Yes.
and then you said there was a goal for the fall of 3%. So, I'd like to know exactly what is our enrollment?
Okay.
Where are we in terms of enrollment?
For our fall enrollment, our fall enrollment last year, 2013, was 5701. At this time, though, last year, it was 1,443 students. We are registering, we are at today's date registering, including our pharmacy students, 1,553 students compared to where we were last year. So, again, we're up by 6% than where we were last year at the same time for our fall enrollment. So we're continually to enroll students because registration is still open. Right. Most of our new admits will be registered throughout the summer as we'll have orientation dates for them that are coming up in June. And just for clarification for our full-time equivalency, last year at this time we were at 1,285. Full-time equivalency, we are at 1,371.
We should also add that
our goal is to have a 3% increase of the total 5701 from last year.
When did you expect the registration to be finalized, or will we be registering all the way up until the day before school starts?
We will be registering all the way up until the first day of classes, and there's a few additional late registration dates.
And, you know, let us not lose sight of the fact that this is another area that we have raised standards in terms of admission standards. We are not admitting students today that we admitted 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And that can have an effect upon the number of students that you get in. But as you see, our goal is to increase the number of students who we bring in, but also increase our standards. Now, we also have a responsibility. Those students who do not meet our standards, we're counseling, advising, and encouraged to go to one of the local community colleges. So, standards are changing at our universities. As I think you heard Dr. Henderson, the provost, make reference to the fact that we meet every Tuesday and Thursday with faculty by department. Faculty are telling us, department by department, that they see a difference in the quality of students that they have in their classes. They see a difference. I mean, there's not one department we go to where faculty do not just volunteer that statement, that there's definitely a difference in the quality of students that we have. And once again, I commend the faculty and the staff for supporting the policies that have made it, because it was difficult. We chose quality over quantity. And in the long run, it will pay off. And we will, you know, have a stronger university.
Any other comments from trustees?
I have a question. Yeah, I've got a question. I wanted to know, I want to pose this question so it brings light to it. But here it is. When were financial aid award packages available for students to view? I'm involved in enrollment and admissions, and I've been doing so since 2004. And my understanding is that some students did not have a financial aid award package available to be viewed. If it was there, it was not able to be viewed for them to make a decision to go here by May 1st. Please correct me on that and tell me if either I am mistakenly informed or if that has been corrected, or when is that going to be corrected, or how so that was corrected.
Trustee Rayner, from my debriefing with the Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management, those packets have already went out to students. The deadline to commit to CSU was extended, and I don't know the exact date that the students were actually able to view it online.
But others, and following up with that, thank you so much, following up with that, but other schools, the majority of schools, their deadlines to go to other schools, you know, competitors, not as great as our universities, but competitors, was May 1st. And it was my understanding that some students still were not able to view it. I'm not saying it wasn't there, we're still not able to view it.
And once again, we have to put it in context. We never had a deadline before.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we are changing the dates, the standards, and everything. This is part of the sea change. And there was a glitch on this one.
Okay.
When we first rolled it out. But we caught it, we corrected it, and it's now moving forward.
So,
but before, the date never even existed for us.
Okay.
So, you know, we're rolling it out, Provost.
That's exactly what I wanted to say. Part of the change is students have, the culture has always been that students will find out their package when they present it to the school during their first week of school. And so it's taken us 2 years to change that to say nationally May 1st is College Commitment Day, and we're going to commit to that now. It's hard because the community isn't used to us having that date. So we, from the beginning of the year, we've advertised May 1st. Our financial aid team has had to change its policies and procedures and practices to adhere to that May 1st. Also, if you're used to doing your FAFSA, or your financial aid application, most schools have people do them early. So if you apply via Common App and do that in October and November, then you'll have your package award on May 1st. Many of our high school students are still changing their culture as well. So we had that, and we had a computer glitch. But actually, although it was later than May 1st, we are very pleased that in the month of May, our new students are able to look at their financial aid packages, and that's something they haven't been able to do. And trustee, we will work very hard to ensure that that is done before May 1st in the upcoming years.
And let me just follow up on that. I asked that question not to cast a downlight on it, but thank you for your transparency. The students appreciate that. We know you're working on it. I just needed to know so that I can inform the students that we are doing everything possible to get it.
And I want to commend the financial aid staff. You know, those are civil service staff, and you know, because this sea change has taken 2 years to install, to bring about retraining, and you know, as Martha said, shoot for the stars and hit the moon. And this one, they didn't hit the stars, but they did hit the moon. We didn't hit the May 1st date, but we did hit the May 7th date. And the first time in history that anybody can remember of us even doing it and us having a date like this here. So I apologize that we didn't hit May 1st, but they did hit around May 7th, and I want to commend those staff who put in those hours to do that. And I promise you that next year we will hit May 1st.
Last thing, because I didn't get to ask it before. Approximately how many students, I know I had asked this before, does your offices see provost and enrollment management per week, you know, roughly, estimate? How many students are you
helping? Honestly, I couldn't give you that number. It would be my guesstimation being in the office, the number of students that come in daily. There's 20 to 50 students that may come in throughout the day to our Office of Enrollment Management. But I also wanted to point out that
that's doing non-peak.
And that's right, during the non-peak time. During the peak time, it's double that amount of students because we're trying to resolve some issues that they may have with registration. And they want information about scholarships, et cetera. But I also want to point out that our enrollment for new admits is up by 10%. So I don't want us to understand that we are working very diligently to make sure that our enrollment is up and that we have qualified students here at CSU.
Thank you. I mean, you could tell me, I want this for the record for the students to know your efforts that they don't often hear so much about, that extra effort that you make and the amount of students that you see on top of having to do and fulfill your roles and your responsibilities. On behalf of the students, I just want to say that you are greatly appreciated And, you know, I want to make this knowledge available for the record to the students so that they know and they are able to appreciate a little bit more what you are doing. And I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, trustee.
If there are no further comments from the board, that will conclude the enrollment management report. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Eggers. And now we'll hear from Ms. Farah Muscadin on student affairs.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
Obviously, you all know me, Farah Muscadin, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs and Interim Dean of Students. I'm excited to be before you on with a different hat on this morning as the interim dean. It's been an exciting transition as we separated the division of student affairs from enrollment management. I commend our president for doing that, because I think part of the rationale was to have a student-focused division. We want our students to know that the areas under this umbrella, which I'll discuss in a moment, are for them, and that they have student advocates that are there to listen to their concerns, address their concerns, and be another voice for them on campus. So I'm really excited about this. We have a great team. And under this umbrella of the Division of Student Affairs, we have several different units. And that includes Student Activities and Leadership, which is responsible for all our activities on campus. The Latino Resource Center, the African American Male Resource Center, Housing and Residential Life, our Counseling Center, our Abilities Office, Student Support Services, and hopefully that we can launch this in the fall, we really want to create a Women's Resource Center. Obviously, you know our demographics of 70% women. So our goal is to create and implement a Women's Resource Center for fall 2014. So as we have this new division, we are meeting as a team to create a new mission statement and a strategic plan. We have set some short-term and long-term goals, and some of our short-term goals are a mission statement and strategic plan, and completely revamping the Division of Student Affairs, what we call DOSA, website. Our goal for the website is for it to be a student resource, right? We're in an internet technology age. We feel as though our students should be able to go to one place that they know that they can find information about student organizations on campus, the events going on campus, where to register, where to pay for parking, who they need to talk to about these issues, in one centralized location. So right now we're formulating all our ideas about our website, and we look forward to launching it by the time the students come back in the fall. But this is part of kind of our short-term list of things that we want the students to see some changes pretty immediately with where we're going. And part of the development and the discussion about our mission statement were the 5 E's that is a part of the university's mission statement. And I just found them so key to what we do here at CSU. And that's embracing our students, engaging them, enlightening them, clearly educating them, and empowering them. And those are the focus. The 5 E's are the focus of DOSA. And we have incorporated that in our draft mission statement, and that is really going to be our mantra. We are the 5 E's. And it's great that our team shares that vision of where we want to go for student affairs. Just shortly, in terms of our long-term goals, for what the students have asked, we have a great residence hall. It's really nice. And right now we're at 230. Right now out of 330. And I went to tour it, and I came back and I met with Dr. Watson, and I said, man, Dr. Watson, you have a great residence hall. I said, it just needs a little love, a little beautification, and in a year I guarantee you we'll be at capacity. And our president was receptive and said, do what you need to do. So we are making some serious improvements to the residence halls of what the students asked for. They asked for an upgraded computer lab. We're gonna do that. They asked for an area that is a 24-hour study, quiet zone. We're doing some painting and just what I call the HGTV of the dorm, a little new furniture in the entry, and tables and chairs and a conference center where we can bring in guests to do seminars. We find that we are looking into doing workshops on conflict resolution, stress management, and it would be great to be able to have a space in the dorm to be able to do that for that specific population. So we're really looking forward to the changes, and we really want to hit our goal of being at capacity in a year, because we want to come back to you and start having a conversation about building another dorm. We really want to get to that point, but we've got to fill our dorm first, and I think these minor changes will make a difference and improve the quality of life and the quality of academic life for our students who live in the residence hall. Another long-term, or what we're doing, is some minor changes in the SUB. The student union building is the student's building. It's the place that they go to hang out, to get information. So we're just making some minor tweaks there to make it more student-friendly, to make it more welcoming. We're looking for space in there to put our Women's Resource Center. One thing that I'd like to do is we have a meditation room that we just have every day at the same time, just a place where students can go to do meditation for 20 minutes. My father would personally love that. He's very big on meditation. So it's our goal really is student focused. We want the students to know that we're listening, we hear them, and that we're here to support what they want. And a lot of things that they're asking for, we can do. And we just have to get it done. And so that's why I am so appreciative that I have such a great team that shares the same passion for the students and want to get the work that we need to do done. And I'm very confident that we will. So that concludes my report.
Any comments from trustees?
I'd like to just say what a great addition Ms. Muscadin is to that position. We do know her as board members, and she's just been fantastic helping us and legislatively moving the needle in that area. So welcome. I'd also like to know why you're interested in having a second student dorm.
I think it lends to enrollment. We want to grow. We want to diversify. It's tied to so many different aspects in terms of, for example, our athletics. You know, we want that women's soccer team. We have our HSI goals. Right. So that would get us to, I believe, 2,500 Latino mm-hmm. students by 2016. And we've talked about this a lot at board meetings in terms of our first-time, full-time freshmen. We really want to grow that number. We know what we are. We know we're a transfer university, but it doesn't mean we can't grow that number. And a lot of times when you're dealing with first-time, full-time freshmen, they want the opportunity to live on campus. And it's also, in the city of Chicago, cost-effective for our students. So as we grow that number, I think we should have a parallel kind of plan to think about expanding and possibly bringing another dorm on campus.
The other reason, you know, in addition to what Farah is stating, it comes back to safe environment. This story, I was talking to one of our faculty in the College of Education, and he said that a student, he teaches a class in the evening time, and the class meets only one day a week. So it's a three-hour class every Monday. And the first hour and a half, this young lady would stay, but when it came to break time, he would say, okay, see you back in 10 minutes, and the class would go for 10 minutes, and they're supposed to come back. The whole class would come back, but she never came back. And so after about a month and a half, he said, you know, why is it that you never come back? You're one of my better students. And she said, Doc, no, oh, I forgot to say, this class is in the evening time. So it starts about 6 o'clock. She said, Doc, I live in Inglewood. And if I'm not in my house by 8 o'clock, I have some serious safety challenges. So here it is, her desire is to go to college, but she lives in a community that she acknowledges is a challenge. And so anybody says, well, Doc is talking about Inglewood, let me just for the record say, I grew up in Inglewood, my family home is still in Inglewood, and my Some of my children are still living in Inglewood, so I'm not putting Inglewood down. I live there and I love it. My father still lives there. But we have to provide a safe environment. And to give these young men and young ladies an opportunity to have class, to live on campus, would help to give them a safe environment. Another young man came to me and he said, when he goes home, and he's taking biochemistry and organic chemistry, all of that, one of our top students, he said he and his brother get in a fight about once every other month because his brother's into drugs. He's not into it. His brother's into loud music, and he needs to be able to study. And so he can't study, but he's got to go home every day. And he said, Doc, it's just a challenge. Either I need to quit school or I need to do something. We need to be able to give our young men and young ladies a safe environment, an environment that is conducive to education. So we will need another library. But I don't want to build a library to...
You're on your own with this one.
You know.
We needed that.
Okay.
We needed that.
We needed that. We do need, we also need another dormitory. But we want to fill it with students who have an academic pursuit. Students who appreciate academic rigor, okay? And so we've downsized our student body intentionally. We made a decision for quality over quantity. And now that we have the quality, we're going to slowly build that up. And as we do, we're going to need another dormitory. We need a safe place so that our students can come from 47th Street, can come from 63rd Street, come from our various neighborhoods, and have a safe place that they can learn. So, Trustee, I hope that gives you a little bit of insight why we must provide a safe environment. Because going home to some of our neighborhoods, it's not really safe.
Oh, I understand. I live in one of those neighborhoods.
Farrah, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Where are we on student publications, on yearbook, student newspaper, things like that?
So the student newspaper is on our long-term goal. We have had some initial conversations about it, calling it Cougar News. We are talking to a couple of faculty members to chair the committee that would recruit students to do that. And then Dr. Watson has approved setting aside a small budget to do that. So we are looking into that. That's definitely on our list of our long-term goals. Okay. And the publication, is that what the other?
The yearbook.
Oh, yeah. So we actually just had that conversation, mm-hmm. I think on Wednesday maybe,
yep.
Mm-hmm. During our commencement hearing. And Dr. Watson has asked me, and I forgot who the other person was, to look into having a yearbook. And part of that came out of our graduation reception, where for the first time the students were able to take pictures by college, and so we discussed how great it would be to have individual pictures of students. And I believe CSU, Dr. Watson said CSU had one at one point, so we are definitely going to look into that.
Decades ago, we had.
I'm familiar with this because I'm in it. There's an actual picture of me in a classroom paying attention.
Trustee Curtin, I didn't mean it in that way. When I said decades ago. But decades ago, we did have a student yearbook. And if you ever, one of the more very warm activities we have on campus, we started 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, the senior dinner. Mm-hmm. We started a dinner 3 to 4 years ago. First time where all seniors come for dinner and they bring their loved one. And it is really, it's more touching and more embracing and engaging than our graduation. because we give every student a chance that wants to stand up and talk and give a testimonial. It almost becomes a church or a religious experience. And